Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome back to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. Today, we take you to the classroom for a real English lesson with Jill Robbins and Jonathan Evans. It is a special program, and if you listen carefully, you can learn a lot. Did you know that one very small and simple English word often causes confusion for English students? That is just one of the many things we have for you on today's special As It Is program. Here is Jill to start things off.
What word appears most often in English? It's the, also known as the definite article. Its partner, the indefinite article, a, is also among the top 10 most frequent words in English. According to Professor Elka Todeva of the SIT Graduate Institute in Brattleboro, Vermont, a and the are also some of the most difficult words for learners to figure out how to use without some assistance. A, an, and the are called articles. Why are these small words so hard to learn? More than 200 languages do not have articles. Other languages have articles, but use them differently than English does. As a result, figuring out the logic of English articles can be challenging.
Professor Todeva says English article usage falls into certain patterns. A basic understanding of common patterns can make learning articles easier. Fairy tales capture one such powerful pattern, which Elka Todeva calls the the switch. The the switch occurs between the first and second mention. It is a shift from new to already familiar information. Listen for the articles as she reads an example. Pay attention to the way a turns into the with the second mention of the old man and the old woman.
Once upon a time, there was an old man and an old woman who lived in a little cottage in a vast open field. The old woman and the old man were very hungry, so the old woman decided to bake a gingerbread man.
Before we explore this pattern and fairy tales further, let us look at some basic rules for article usage.
A and an are indefinite articles used before non-specific members of a group or category of nouns. The article a appears before singular nouns starting with a consonant sound. For example, I ate a banana. The article an comes before singular nouns beginning with a vowel sound. For example, give me an apple. The is called a definite article. The appears before nouns which are specific members of a category, as in, I went to see the movie George Clooney just made. Also, use the with previously mentioned nouns. For example, we went to a movie last night. The movie was called Spy. Use the with unique things like the sun, the moon, the front door, and the tallest man in the world.
In some situations, there is no article before a noun. Grammarians call this the zero article. The zero article appears before proper nouns, names like Picasso and John Lennon. It also goes with names of places and institutions, which consist of a proper name and another noun, as in Michigan State University. There is also no article before the names of days, months, seasons, and holidays. There is no article before geographical names like Europe, Italy, Tokyo, and Lake Superior. The zero article applies to names of languages and nationalities, as with Chinese or English. For example, Spanish is spoken in Spain. But if you are describing the people of that country, use the definite article. The Spanish are known for being friendly. The zero article also goes with names of sports and academic subjects.
Professor Todeva is both a learner and teacher of English. She says the human brain loves patterns and finding logic behind things. She encourages teachers and learners to explore grammatical patterns in fun, engaging ways. She calls this grammaring. Let's look at some common patterns in article usage. Professor Todeva takes us back to fairy tales or traditional stories to demonstrate how the switch from a to the works.
This particular pattern is very beautifully illustrated in most English fairy tales and in many jokes as well. Most fairy tales in English start with once upon a time. There is suspense, there is sweet anticipation. We're not sure what the story is about yet. We expect something exciting and something new, thus the use of the indefinite article at the beginning of most fairy tales, as in the following piece from The Gingerbread Man. Once upon a time, there was an old man and an old woman who lived in a little cottage, first mentioned, in a vast open field.
Here, the storyteller uses the indefinite articles because the characters are new to the listener or reader. When the information becomes familiar, the storyteller uses the definite article, the.
The old woman and the old man were very hungry, so the old woman decided to bake a gingerbread man.
You might notice the the switch in most jokes. Here is an example.
A man walks into a doctor's office. He has a cucumber up his nose, a carrot in his left ear, and a banana in his right ear. What's wrong with me? He asked the doctor, because it's already implied, and the doctor says, you're not eating properly.
Notice how the joke sets the stage with new information first. It starts with a before switching to the.
Another important pattern involves general statements. General statements refer to all or many members of a group. For example, politicians only care about money. You will often see general statements on bumper stickers. These are small labels on the back of cars that express the owner's feelings or opinions. You might see bumper stickers that say, well-behaved women rarely make history, or teachers touch the future. Notice that general statements use the zero article. Here's another general statement that you will probably agree with. Articles are challenging for English learners. Look for a future everyday grammar with more tips for using articles. Take Professor Todeva's advice and let your brain pay attention to some of the patterns that we just explored. Happy learning and grammaring with the English language. For VOA Learning English Everyday Grammar, I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Iraqi and Kurdish forces, supported by United States airstrikes, have regained territories controlled by Islamic State militants in the past month. The U.S. military believes the loss of leadership is one of the reasons the group has lost many recent battles. Coalition airstrikes have killed 10 of the IS group leaders. Some of them planned the attacks in Paris that took place in November. Others were planning attacks on other Western targets. This week, the U.S. military confirmed that an alliance of Kurdish, Christian, Arab, and other local forces recaptured the Tishrin hydroelectric dam from the militants. The dam on the Euphrates River, near Aleppo, is part of an important communications route for the IS group. The dam also provides much of the power for northern Syria. Earlier, the alliance also recaptured more than 20 cities south of the Syrian city of Kobani from IS militants. The Islamic State group has also suffered defeat in the important Iraqi city of Ramadi. The mostly Sunni city was the center of the IS group's control of much of western Anbar province. Iraqi military officials said Iraqi forces, with some help from Sunni tribal fighters, recaptured most of the city this week from the Islamic State militants. A U.S. military spokesman said there had been more than 600 airstrikes around Ramadi during the past 6 months to provide support. American officials, however, are not prepared to claim victory in Ramadi. One official said it is too early to call it a total defeat of the terrorists. The official said it is more appropriate to call it a strategic step in the right direction. In 2006 and 2007, Sunni tribal forces were a major reason for the success of attacks by U.S. forces on al-Qaeda fighters in the area. Iraqi and U.S. officials said the Sunni fighters now controlling Ramadi had a minor role in its recapture. Experts believe local forces must be able to defend the area if the Islamic State group is to be defeated. Michael Pregent is a former U.S. military intelligence officer and advisor. He said it will not be clear who has won in Ramadi for at least another 6 months to a year. He said it is not just the destruction of the city that is a victory. You have to resettle the population and bring economic stimulus, provide security. He added that the city has been destroyed. There is no intact building left. There is little infrastructure that is inhabitable. You can't go there tomorrow and open a store. It is not known what happened to the hundreds or even thousands of civilians who were trapped in the city. Iraqi government leaders said their forces will soon attack the Islamic State group in Mosul, Iraq's second-largest city. Sunnis are a majority of the population there. The militants have controlled Mosul since June 2014. At that time, IS quickly advanced on and took control of large areas of northern and western Iraq and eastern Syria. Kurdish forces have defeated Islamic State terrorists to the north and east of Mosul, but they do not want to advance beyond territory they have traditionally lived in. Iraqi Finance Minister Hoshyar Zabari said the country needs the Kurds to help retake Mosul. He told the Reuters news agency that they are a major force and will be necessary in that battle. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. We present the short story, The Ransom of Red Chief, by O. Henry. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
It looked like a good thing. But wait till I tell you. We were down south in Alabama, Bill Driscoll and myself, when this kidnapping idea struck us. There was a town down there as flat as a pancake and called Summit. Bill and I had about $600. We needed just $2,000 more for an illegal land deal in Illinois. We chose for our victim the only child of an influential citizen named Ebenezer Dorset. He was a boy of 10, with red hair. Bill and I thought that Ebenezer would pay a ransom of $2,000 to get his boy back, but wait till I tell you. About 2 miles from Summit was a little mountain covered with cedar trees. There was an opening on the back of the mountain. We stored our supplies in that cave. One night, we drove a horse and carriage past old Dorset's house. The boy was in the street throwing rocks at a cat on the opposite fence. "Hey, little boy," says Bill, "would you like to have a bag of candy and a nice ride?" The boy hits Bill directly in the eye with a piece of rock. That boy put up a fight like a wild animal, but at last we got him down in the bottom of the carriage and drove away. We took him up to the cave. The boy had 2 large bird feathers stuck in his hair. He points a stick at me and says, "Ha, Paleface, do you dare to enter the camp of Red Chief, the terror of the plains?" "He's all right now," says Bill, rolling up his pants and examining wounds on his legs. "We're playing Indian. I'm old Hank, the trapper, Red Chief's captive. I'm going to be scalped at daybreak by Geronimo. That kid can kick hard." "Red Chief," says I to the boy, "would you like to go home?" "Ah, what for?" says he. "I don't have any fun at home. I hate to go to school. I like to camp out. You won't take me back home again, will you?" "Not right away," says I. "We'll stay here in the cave for a while." "All right," says he. "That'll be fine. I never had such fun in all my life." We went to bed about 11 o'clock. Just at daybreak, I was awakened by a series of terrible screams from Bill. Red Chief was sitting on Bill's chest with one hand holding his hair. In the other, he had a sharp knife. He was attempting to cut off the top of Bill's head based on what he had declared the night before. I got the knife away from the boy, but after that event, Bill's spirit was broken. He lay down, but he never closed an eye again in sleep as long as that boy was with us. "Do you think anybody will pay out money to get a little imp like that back home?" Bill asked. "Sure," I said. "A boy like that is just the kind parents love. Now, you and the chief get up and make something to eat while I go up on the top of this mountain and look around." I climbed to the top of the mountain. Over toward summit, I expected to see the men of the village searching the countryside, but all was peaceful. "Perhaps," says I to myself, "it has not yet been discovered that the wolves have taken the lamb from the fold." I went back down the mountain. When I got to the cave, I found Bill backed up against the side of it. He was breathing hard, with the boy threatening to strike him with a rock. "He put a red-hot potato down my back," explained Bill, "and then crushed it with his foot. I hit his ears. Have you got a gun with you, Sam?" I took the rock away from the boy and ended the argument. "I'll fix you," says the boy to Bill. "No man ever yet struck the Red Chief but what he got paid for it. You better be careful." After eating, the boy takes a leather object with strings tied around it from his clothes and goes outside the cave, unwinding it. Then we heard a kind of shout. It was Red Chief holding a sling in one hand. He moved it faster and faster around his head. Just then I heard a heavy sound and a deep breath from Bill. A rock, the size of an egg, had hit him just behind his left ear. Bill fell in the fire across the frying pan of hot water for washing the dishes. I pulled him out and poured cold water on his head for half an hour. Then I went out and caught that boy and shook him. "If your behavior doesn't improve," says I, "I'll take you straight home. Now, are you going to be good or not?" "I was only funnin'," says he. "I didn't mean to hurt old Hank, but what did he hit me for? I'll behave if you don't send me home." I thought it best to send a letter to old man Dorset that day, demanding the ransom and telling how it should be paid. The letter said, "We have your boy hidden in a place far from Summit. We demand $1,500 for his return. The money to be left at midnight tonight at the same place and in the same box as your answer. If you agree to these terms, send the answer in writing by a messenger tonight at 8:30. After crossing Owl Creek, on the road to Poplar Cove, there are 3 large trees. At the bottom of the fence, opposite the 3rd tree, will be a small box. The messenger will place the answer in this box and return immediately to Summit. If you fail to agree to our demand, you will never see your boy again. If you pay the money as demanded, he will be returned to you safe and well within 3 hours. I took the letter and walked over to Poplar Cove. I then sat around the post office and store. An old man there says he hears Summit is all worried because of Ebenezer Dorset's boy having been lost or stolen. That was all I wanted to know. I mailed my letter and left. The postmaster said the mail carrier would come by in an hour to take the mail on to Summit. At 8:30, I was up in the third tree, waiting for the messenger to arrive. Exactly on time, a half-grown boy rides up the road on a bicycle. He finds the box at the foot of the fence. He puts a folded piece of paper into it and leaves, turning back toward Summit. I slid down the tree, got the note, and was back at the cave in a half hour. I opened the note and read it to Bill. This is what it said. Gentlemen, I received your letter about the ransom you ask for the return of my son. I think you're a little high in your demands. I hereby make you a counterproposal, which I believe you will accept. You bring Johnny home and pay me $250, and I agree to take him off your hands. You had better come at night, because the neighbors believe he is lost, and I could not be responsible for what they would do to anybody they saw bringing him back. Very respectfully, Ebenezer Dorset. Great pirates of Penzance, says I, of all the nerve! But I looked at Bill and stopped. He had the most appealing look in his eyes I ever saw on the face of a dumb or talking animal. Sam, says he, what's $250 after all? We've got the money. One more night of this boy will drive me crazy. I think Mr. Dorset is making us a good offer. You aren't going to let the chance go, are you? Tell you the truth, Bill, says I. This little lamb has got on my nerves, too. We'll take him home, pay the ransom, and make our getaway. We took him home that night. We got him to go by telling him that his father had bought him a gun and we were going to hunt bears the next day. It was 12 o'clock when we knocked on Ebenezer's front door. Bill counted out $250 into Dorset's hand. When the boy learned we were planning to leave him at home, he started to cry loudly and held himself as tight as he could to Bill's leg. His father pulled him away, slowly.
How long can you hold him? Asked Bill.
I'm not as strong as I used to be, says old Dorset. But I think I can promise you 10 minutes.
Enough, says Bill. In 10 minutes, I shall cross the central, southern, and middle western states and be running for the Canadian border.
And as dark as it was, and as fat as Bill was, and as good a runner as I am, he was a good mile and a half out of Summit before I could catch up with him.